welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and our program today is it's sort of a combination of things, and I think you're going to enjoy it. We're going to be talking about food. I know that there are those, I don't know that there are arguments, I would hope not, but there are certainly people who will say that the universal language from the scientific standpoint is math. I don't know about that. Then they say, others who say more esoterically, music is the universal language. And others will say that food is a universal language. It's one of those. We'll find out what our guest has to say about that. We're going to be talking with the professional chef, Debbie Wilson Bermont. She goes by Chef Sagajo. And I want to welcome you to our program. And fortunately, you don't have to worry about how hot it is in the kitchen, because you're not in the kitchen now. And you remember that old saying of Harry Truman's? If you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Get out of the kitchen. Well, I'm in the kitchen.
You love the kitchen. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And I am excited about this because I am my wife's sous chef.
Lovely.
Yeah, that's kind of the way we put it. And or she puts it. Let me put it that way. And I'm willing to do that because I'm learning. I mean, you know, and of course, I grew up in a household with 5 females, my brother and my father. So we were kind of outnumbered, but I still learned a little bit on how to cook. First, a question I want to ask you, and we'll get into the Sagajo experience. How would you define the difference between a cook and a chef?
So, you know, a chef is a trained chef, for instance, is very much different. The techniques that are used to prepare the meal, you know, the refining of all the ingredients. It's not a pinch of this and a pinch of that, like a regular cook would be in a kitchen. But definitely the techniques, I would say, brings it up to a certain level.
And then there are different kinds of cooking, and this is now out of the personality realm, where there are certain kinds of meal preparation from the get-go that require precision in measurements. And then, as you just kind of described, there are other types of cooking where it's a pinch of this and a pinch of that. And if I'm correct, at least one of them that I'm aware of is baking. You have to be precise in measurements.
Very much so, very much so. It's, you can get away with that with cooking, but you're not going to get away with that with baking. Baking is a very precise step of measurements that you have to use in order for your baked goods or whatever it is you're making, your pastries, your pies, whatever it is. It has to be beautiful. It has to come out just right. So yes, measurements, definitely.
I have also noticed that when I'm watching some of these cooking programs with chefs, not cooks, but chefs, as well as the judges who are usually their chefs, you'd think that these would be rather large individuals because they're in the kitchen. And one of the first rules that I remember hearing was make sure that you taste everything, especially as you're going, which you're going to go through a lot of spoons. Okay, fine. But taste it. Make sure it tastes the way you want it to taste. You are, you're not a big woman. You're, you know, you have not been eating in the kitchen a lot in terms of that. What is... Not so much what's your secret per se, but is it because, yeah, you're in the kitchen and yes, you're tasting, but it's such a small amount, it doesn't really impact, you know, one's weight or chemistry in that regard.
Yeah, the size of the individual who's doing the preparation for the food doesn't matter. But big flavors, it matters. Big flavors comes from the different spices. At least for me, I was brought up in the Caribbean, the beautiful twin islands of Trinidad and Tobago.
Wow.
And so I learned to, and my mother, she is a chef. So I grew up around all of this, you know, all of this lovely food being prepared around me. So flavor profiling is very important for me. I try to blend my flavors, you know, just to make something my own. A lot of people would say, so a cake is a cake. And I would say, yes, definitely a cake is a cake. But what flavors you put in it and your own spin makes it your own, you know. So definitely big in the kitchen is flavor profile, blending of your spices for flavorful dishes. That's the key. A key component is making sure that you have great flavor with your food. And like you said, you know, tasting as you go along, very important. You'd like to know if I need a little more salt. Should I add a little more pepper? Should I add a little more garlic? All these different things. It does matter because at the end of the day, the final dish that you're preparing for anyone, for, you know, it's supposed to be flavorful and good.
Yeah. Do you think that, especially here in the States, that in general, we have lost the ability to truly, I'll use this word to sort of complement what you've already said, we've lost the ability to truly savor, really enjoy our food.
You know, I will tend to agree with you there. That's part of my reason for bringing out the Sagajo experience. Great question. Thanks for asking that question. It's not just the preparation of the food, but it's actually the way in which the food is being served. It's presented to you. So, for instance, you know, entertaining is a big part of what I do. And when I'm entertaining, I try to present my food. You know, I spend a lot of time cooking it in the kitchen, whether it's slow cooked meats or whatever it is roasting in the oven. I tend to, you know, nobody sees that part, but the part that they do see is when they come to my house and it's you know, the dish is ready to be presented to the table. You know, savoring the meal, sitting down with your company and enjoying the meal around the ambiance that I have prepared, you know, whether it be candles, flowers, you know, great glass of wine, pairing together with whatever it is, or whatever meat or whatever meal that I cook, those are pleasurable moments. That's savoring the food in the sense of, you know, your ability to create these moments, these eating moments, these dining experiences. So it has to be pleasurable.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more in that regard. And I also have to say that my mother, she is actually 90 this year,
Oh, God bless her.
Went, yeah, well, and she has actually outlived my father. He passed away last March at the age of 91. He and all the rest of us, we really enjoyed some great meals. There are things that my mother cooked when I was a kid. I wish that I could create or recreate. But I've learned a very valuable lesson, and it was more in regards to my grandmother on my mother's side. And her husband had built for her one of these huge stone outdoor cooking station, so to speak. And it was like, I don't know if it, he covered, he maybe made it from brick and then he covered it with concrete and what have you, had a chimney. It was wood burning, had this huge metal surface, the griddle, I guess you might say. And she would cook tortillas out there. I know when I am eating an authentically cooked or homemade tortilla because you don't see those little black spots, if you will, on the tortilla. You know what I'm talking about. You don't see those in the package of Mission tortillas that we have out here, or in the plastic bag, whatever the brand is. But she also made incredible tamales, and I got to see the assembly line where my grandfather would be separating the red peppers from the vine and so forth at the sink. And then he would be cutting them up, and then they would put them in the, and then there was the masa, and there was all this kind of stuff. And my favorites were what were called Christmas tamales. And they were beans and raisins, believe it or not. Refried beans and raisins. Well, I've been looking around to try to find that flavor, that taste. And it took me a while to realize I'm never going to find it because my grandmother added something, and something you add, I'm sure, when you are cooking, to that recipe, to that meal that you're preparing, that nobody else can put into it. And that is, if you will, I'll say yourself, but it's that love. And there's something about being in that energetic state. I want to talk a little bit about that in terms of food preparation. Have you ever been to a restaurant or someone's home where they were doing the cooking and you could feel it was palpable in the air? There was this tension. And when the food was served, it wasn't horrible, but it didn't quite taste right. Whereas you knew you had been to that place before when there was no tension and the food was absolutely fantastic. Have you ever had that experience?
I've had that experience at restaurants. You know, most of the people, you know, most of my friends, when I go to their homes, I think they are so, they know they're preparing a meal for their friend, but also she's a chef. Mm-hmm. So I think my friends, they get on that love passion train where the love flavor train too, where they tend to, you know, put a little more effort into it. Some restaurants that I have been to, you know, I found, you know, and they, you know, they're doing things in a bulk. You know, they're not entertaining this, you know, couple or these six people. They're doing it in bulk. And they have a line, you know, with all due respect, a line of cooks and a line of different people to do different things to add to this one particular plate that's coming out to you. So yeah, I've had it, but passion is very, very, love and passion is very important in the kitchen. You know, it shows, it tells you, you know, when that plate comes to you, when that meal comes to you, it literally tells you, you know, with love, you know. So yeah, you get that. And just the way in which the dish looks is important.
We're talking with Chef Sagajo, Debbie is her name, and we're talking about what we'll get into here in just a moment is the Sagajo experience here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and it's always fun to have these kinds of conversations. I've had a few chefs on the program talking about the more, I like to say, metaphysical or spiritual, esoteric aspects of food. And I share this real quick. I'll keep it very brief. I, not every day, but I would say the majority of days in the week, I will swing by a Starbucks, but I have a special recipe for my chai latte that I created and it's in my app and so forth, but I go to different locations depending upon where I'm going in the morning. And I have noticed that there is a difference in the flavors because I know they're using exactly the same ingredients. But the one thing that I really do enjoy about these locations, especially that I've been to a lot, is, and I'm sure that you've had this experience going out to eat, where you walk in and they say, "Hi, Reverend Dr. D," which is my acronym, if you will. It's akin to on Cheers, "Norm," when he walks in the door. And I'm sure you get that feeling as well when you travel about and you go to different restaurants and so forth. And it's really kind of cool. I love that feeling of community, which is part of what we're going to talk about here. I want to talk about the more spiritual aspects of food. But I want to ask you about this, and this is sort of you don't have to answer the question because I'll give you the answer anyway. But there was this question that was asked: What is the one thing that has separated us from true enjoyment, if you will, of our food? What's the one thing? And you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry. You know, one of the things is, you know, authenticity of the actual dish. You know, people don't take that time, I think. Everything now is so rushed. Mm-hmm. Taking the time to prepare a certain dish, making it, you know, flavorful like it was back in those days, you know, it's hard to do for some people because cooking now is bulk. Everybody cooks in quantity, and quality is hard to find sometimes, you know. So, the take on that for me,
Well, I will not disagree with you on your answer, but the answer to this question, and I thought this was fascinating. They said the one thing that has separated us from our true enjoyment of our food, our connection with food, the fork. Now, think about that. Now, I'm not saying we should go into a restaurant, a five star or something like that, and start eating with our hands. By the same token, if you watch a lot of these movies and television programs taking place, especially during the medieval days, before they had utensils, they ate with their hands. Now, it was a little, minus five star establishment, but they were enjoying their food, let me tell you. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I like to eat with my hands for the most part. I will use a utensil. I mean, I know people who will use a knife and fork on pizza. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Or fried
it
chicken.
doesn't work for me.
Yeah, or fried chicken or any other kind of chicken. They will use a knife and fork. And if it's I don't know. It seems to me like maybe one of these days we should set up a one of those pop-up restaurants. We have no utensils. You have to eat your food with your hand. We'll have a washing station. Don't worry. We'll have a washing station. But this ex whole aspect of our food experience is part of what you are sharing with us in the Sagajo experience. First of all, tell us, because you go by not only Chef Debbie and so forth, but Chef Sagajo. What is Sagajo?
Sagjo is a very personal and very very dear to my heart. Sagjo is an acronym from I have three children, three beautiful children, two girls and one boy. And the firstborn is Sasha, and I took the SA from Sasha's name, and the second born is Gabrielle. And I took the GA from Gabriel's name, and the last, which is my boy, is Jonathan, and I took the JO from Jonathan, and there was Sagajou. Everywhere I went in my kitchen, I went with my children, the love of my children, and that's how Sagajou was printed on me. It's very, very, I love it. It takes me into the love in the kitchen when I'm cooking. I think of my kids, especially when I used to work at the country club. I take my kids with me, Sagajo, each and every day. So that's a very important part of me being me.
Well, I think that's beautiful. And
Thank
it's
you.
really kind of nice to be able to take with us those who we truly love in any form for that matter. And I think that's very cool. I love hearing these kinds of stories, which leads us into the aspects of the Sagajo experience, but also I think encompasses quite beautifully the aspect of, and you can use the word family, community. Loved ones, however you want to phrase it, it seems to me that that's sort of the, maybe from this observation, that's sort of the whole purpose behind food, not just to nourish the body. We have to put fuel into the machine to keep it running. But there's something that we have worked on over the centuries that allows us to bring people together and have that kind of energy at the dinner table or at the table, what have you, that can actually transcend a lot of the, oh, what the heck, I'll use the word stupidity that's going on out there
Sure.
amongst in relationships of all sizes and types. It's like, you really need to get over it and realize that what you're all bent out of shape about over that person and their particular perspective on whatever it is meaningless in the grand scheme of things. And it seems to me like the food is only a part of that experience. It's sort of I don't know. I guess you could call it the catalyst, couldn't you?
Yeah, definitely you can call it a catalyst. It's, we need it for many different things, health, life. We need food. It's a necessity for us. And when you're when especially for me, when I'm entertaining with the food, I love watching when I get the table all set and my guests sit, or my family, let's say I'm having a family dinner, and everybody's sitting around the table. I love the whole atmosphere of chatting, smiling. I look around the table and I see nice faces, happy faces, not just because of the food, but because we're all together, and because we're experiencing this wonderful dining experience, eating this lovely meal, joking around, happy moments, making memories, creating great times. These are important experiences, hence the reason why the Sacagawea experience, I decided to write all about it, because in the book there are different experiences. My husband travels, and so for that reason and purpose, I decided to one day have breakfast in bed, prepare breakfast in a beautiful
Yeah,
tray.
nice.
And that's an experience. I invited my friends over for lunch, whether it be the kitchen, where it's a casual dining experience, I do that. So there, brunch with my daughters. There are different dining experiences in the book that, creates happy moments around food. Food is love, food is life. What is life without food? And this is part of the reason why I decided to create the Sacagawea experience. While I can cook, I wanted to make it a book where you can see how I dine and how I create my experiences. And then you can take that recipe and create your own experiences with your family and your friends.
Well, and quite honestly, a life without food is death.
Oh,
Because
it's no life.
we need that food. We do.
We do.
One of the other aspects that I find interesting now, when it comes to the proteins, primarily, the fish or the chicken or the poultry or beef or what have you, or pork. And this is one of the things that I really love about some of these on-demand programs where this father's taking his son out to hunt. Now, they're hunting not just to hunt. They're hunting to feed the family. And these are people who I guess have chosen for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months out of the year to live off the grid, that kind of thing. And they go through this, what I call a ritual. He's teaching the boy how to aim, whether it's a bow and arrow, whether it's whatever it is, a longbow or a gun, and so forth and so on. And then once the kill is done, he takes the boy. I loved this when we saw this. Takes the boy over, and they lay their hands on the animal. And that's not exactly a prayer, although that I'm sure that's done, but they're thankful to the
Yes.
animal for giving them the sustenance that they need to continue their lives. They honor the animal and it's, shall we say, its sacrifice or its gift. And there is a book that is my metaphysical primer called Autobiography of a Yogi, where in it talks about this gentleman by the name of Jagadish Chandra Bose, scientist. And he developed this device called a crescograph that you could hook up to plant. Excuse me. To vegetation, to plants. And he took chloroform and he brought it close to the plant. And the crescograph, kind of like an EKG machine, would almost go flat. But he takes the chloroform away and it starts to resonate again, starts to show signs of life, which began to indicate that, oh my gosh, plants have a potentially have a consciousness. They have an awareness of what's going on, and so forth. And it seems to me, and we did this with our garden, I'd go out and I'd pick a squash for my wife and I'd bring it in, and there was absolutely nothing like taking straight from the garden to the kitchen. I mean, yes, fresh, but it was like, thank you to Mother Earth, to the plant, to the sun for nourishing it, to the, for the rain, all that is encompassing there. Tell us a little bit about your, I want to use the word ritual or tradition, if you will, when it comes to gathering the parts, the ingredients, that's the word, the ingredients to create the meal that you are then going to share with others. And then what you do, what ritual or tradition you go through personally before you start that whole process, or even before you even go into the kitchen. Is there something that you do in that regard?
Well, you know, I'm Christian, so I pray a lot. Yes. But food, yes, definitely. You know, ritual, for me, it's a big deal. Even before we eat our meal, even before I prepare the meal, I pray. You know, I thank God for having this meal in front of me. Because, you know, there are people that are less, you know, fortunate than you are. And we always have to remember things like that.
Yeah.
And like you said, the preparation is always a good preparation. You know, why not, you know, enjoy doing what you do? And like you said, the ritual behind it, you know, thanking God for what we have, you know, everything from farm to table. You know, I personally don't have a garden outside with fresh fruit all the time, but I do try to go to the organic markets to get my fresh produce and meat. You know, I really try to go to my butcher to get that freshness, that pure meat. It's hard to find it, but you do get it at times. You really do. You have to search for it. And bringing it home, you go through all that trouble to go look for this good meat, and you bring it home. You know, you clean it, cleanse it, you pray on it. And, you know, even when it's been, when it's on the table, before we eat, the first things that we do is we thank God for the meal, you know, that has been prepared before us. So, you know, that's a very important point. You know, not a lot of people think about things like that. But I love that you brought that up, because that's important. You know, Mother Earth is important to us. This is where we get our food, our life from, you know. So actually, it's a great, great question. Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. Now, I was born and raised Catholic, and my father actually was Protestant, and my mother was Catholic, and he converted. But I remember the meals that we had at the dining room table, which my father built. He built these two square tables. I want to say they were probably 2.5, maybe 3 feet by 3 feet. And he'd bring them together. And we had these C clamps to connect them for the 8 of us. And I remember the prayer. I guess it's a pretty traditional Catholic prayer that we would say every single meal. It was the same one every time. And yet it was, it started out, "Bless us, O Lord, and these thy gifts, which we are about to receive." And it was like, wow, that was part of the ritual. That was part of the tradition, if you will, or ceremony even. And I mean, I will remember those experiences. I mean, we had a meal around the table probably up until I was 20 or 21. Even when I was delivering newspapers in high school, I always made it a point to either wait until after dinner before I would go bicycling off to go collect money from my customers. So I always made it a point. And there was always something about that was so, I don't know. It was a part of me. Do you have that kind of an experience where you maintain that connection with your children in regards to mealtime? I mean, or are they all older to where they've all gone off on their own, but before they did, your family would sit down at the dining room table. And this is where you had the conversations, or silence sometimes. What about that experience for you?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. We still do that. And, you know, my kids are grown. They're, you know, I have grandbabies now.
Yes. Okay.
Beautiful grandchildren. And yes, it's, you know, I actually just came back from a trip you know, visiting my daughter, son-in-law, and my two grandbabies out. They live out in Colorado. And we, you know, we went to visit with them. And my daughter, she cooked, you know, for us, and the meal was splendid, I have to tell you. And you know, we were all sitting around the table, and you know, she would look around and she would say, you know, Mom, Dad, can you bless the meal? You know, this brings joy to me that she still instills this and still remembers to do this. It's a great quality to teach your children, to teach your family. It's there's absolutely nothing wrong in getting that start, the blessing before you know, acquire your meal. So yeah, you know, I feel proud that she did that while I was there.
And this sort of ties in a little bit to the conversation that we are having here in regards to a lot of people who are very concerned over the future of America, you know, because they think that without the you know, it seems to me like we can actually move forward by retaining some of these traditions, if you will, these ceremonies. But at the same time, there are those who will say, we want to go back to the way it was in the 50s. Well, there's certain groups of people it wasn't so great for in the 50s. Okay, so let's not even talk about that. Let's move forward. Let's evolve as a society, as a civilization, if you will. And of course, that means different things to different people. But it seems to me like we're getting more serious, if you will, in a fun way. Let me put it that way, about some of these areas like food and what you're dealing with. You know, we're taking a harder, longer look at it. What was it that spurred you to, number one, write the book, but also to create this Sacajawea experience that, quite honestly, has, you know, a great, you know, well, has your, not just your energy, but even your children's energy, because it's named after them.
You know, it's listen, it's a I've always wanted to write this book. This has been on my mind for I can't tell you how long, since the kids were little. And you know, even my friends, when they come to my house, back in the days when they came to my house, for anything, for lunch, for a quick snack, for whatever, I would make it beautiful, I would make it nice. And they always say, you always do such great things. Where do you get the time to do this? How do you do this? I just called you up and I told you I'm coming over and you have this beautiful thing in front of me right now. How do you get the time to do this? I said, because I love doing this. This is a passion of mine. This is what I love to do. So, you know, writing this book and putting in, you know, of course I'm a chef, so I can cook. So the thing for me was the experiences, giving people that entertaining lifestyle of how you can go about, you know, doing the preparation and the dining experiences, having fun, creating memories. It's really what it's all about, you know. Food and all these different things are our way of life. And so why not have it celebrated? Celebrate life, celebrate food, you know, do all these things with pleasure and excitement, you know, and that's basically how the Sacajawea experience. So I decided to write it, you know, and I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop writing about all these different experiences.
How do you go about securing the ingredients and finding the quality of ingredients, regardless of what they are, whether they come out of the ground or walk upon the ground, with people's concerns these days? And of course, it seems like it's growing, and maybe it sounds and seems like it's growing because we're inundated on on social media and so forth. And I speak to the issues of, in terms of the animals, the ways in which they are housed, treated, was vaccinated, plants which are sprayed with all kinds of myriads of things and so forth. How do you go about finding those, shall we say, farms or outlets, however that works, where you can feel confident that what you are going to be putting together and serving is not only healthy in and of itself, but also good for the people who are joining in the meal? Because that's a big concern today.
It is. It really is. With a lot of diseases going on, absolutely. You know, I try to find. You know, I go online. I try to keep. I'm very friendly with my butcher. I'm very friendly with the person, the individual that buys that I buy my fish from. Seafood is one of the main things that people are overly concerned about, and they should be. So I tend to go to a lot of, you know, organic farms. And sort of pick my own vegetables. I also ask a lot of questions while I'm there, you know, like what did you spray this with? You know, but I come home, and it doesn't matter if you go to an organic farm or you go to your butcher or wherever you go to, you just don't bring the food home and start chopping it up and start cooking it. You have to take that time to wash everything that you're preparing. You know, cleanliness is very important. You know, back in the days at the country club and all these different places, we use gloves to before we could touch the food. You know, I find myself doing that a lot, especially with the meats, where I wear my gloves at times, because to me it's a sense of cleanliness. You know, so yeah, we are concerned. And while we are concerned, you know, it's important to know your butcher, to know your fishmonger, to know the organic farm, the place where your food is being grown. And, you know, just don't take people's words for it. Bring it home. You bring it home and you clean it, you wash it, you wipe it, you go through it. You know, it's a big concern. Absolutely. You know, and people should be concerned. But also cleanliness, you know, the way you prepare the food when it comes home. It's very important. You know, cleanliness is very important. Using clean utensils, using a don't use a meat board to cut vegetables. Use it just for meat, because things do get contaminated, you know. And so that's what you're trying to prevent. You know, contamination is wide, you know.
Yeah.
So don't use a meat board to cut your peppers or your onions, you know. Separate them, you know, have a vegetable board, have a fruit board, have a meat board, you know, different techniques, you know. It helps to create a clean environment, you know, for you to prepare your meals.
What about a big issue, primarily here in the States, the issue of portions? I mean, there are some places that, there was a restaurant in Phoenix. It was called Stuart Anderson's Black Angus Restaurant. I don't know if it's still open or not. It was a steakhouse. And their slogan was, "We don't fool you, we feed you." And boy, did they.
Boy, do they feed you. Huh?
If there was a plate underneath the food, you couldn't see it. There was that much food. And then, of course, you also have these smorgasbord restaurants. I'm not sure how many of them are left or what have you. I'm sure they're still around. But it seems as though somehow we've gotten it in our heads that more is better. And then we have this, sadly, this incredible obesity issue in our country. And I'm going to say this very clearly here, that when I see individuals who appear to me to be overweight, my observation is not, "Oh my God, look at that fat person." No, my concern is that is so unhealthy. They are putting so much strain on their internal organs, especially their heart. If they don't do something about that, they need to lose weight for their health. It's not about fat shaming, as the slogan goes. It's about caring for one's health. I used to be 200 pounds. Okay. I'm only 5'9". Now, when I got to 200, when I saw that, I'm going, I don't like that number. And it was psychological more than anything else. I didn't like the number psychologically. It didn't matter about the physical weight. It didn't help my knees much. Now I'm down to 175 for various reasons, which I won't go into, but it's like, those were the, it just kind of happened for me naturally. And that's where I wanted to be, was 175, which was the weight I was 25 years ago when I met my present wife. But how do you address that issue in terms of the things that you cook? Have you ever cooked like a really fattening meal, potentially, I guess, fattening meal, or loaded with this or that or the other, or you stay focused on the healthy stuff, the healthy meals, which again can still be really, really good, very tasty and so forth and so forth. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm listening to you, and one of the things, you know, that I've always stressed on, besides eating healthy things, organic things, mm-hmm. is portioning. Portion is very important. It's very, very important. So you like you said, you went to this restaurant and there was a lot of food and you couldn't even see the bottom of the plate, and then just food after food. So portioning yourself, portioning what you eat, a little of this, a little of that, you know, a little of everything, you know, on a plate is very important. To me, that's healthy eating, not just in what you eat, but you can eat anything. You can eat cakes, you can eat breads, you can eat. My philosophy is, because I'm a chef, you know, butter, for instance, let's take butter. Everybody talks about butter. I mm-hmm. love butter. You know, I put butter in all my meals, mm-hmm. right? You know, I do my steaks with butter. I do, you know, all my cakes, real butter. I don't use anything that I wouldn't eat myself. I use real cream. I use everything, because to me, it tastes better that way. But you're not going to eat a whole cake, or you're not going to eat 10 slices of that one cake that you make. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, while you want to eat all the organic greens and all your proteins and your vegetables, and you're getting all the beets in and all these different things in, portioning is very important to me. Mm-hmm. Not overeating. Your stomach can only take so much. The reason why people can eat so much is because they tell themselves they can eat so much, and they continue eating and eating and eating. And they're developing this habit of they can eat more and more. But I've always believed in portion. That's my, you know, like you said, you know, I'm not big. I'm not a big person. But, you know, that's how I eat. I portion, you know, and that's exactly what I do for my company. You know, I put out a wonderful meal. But, you know, everybody takes a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You eat in portions. And I think that's very important for health, you know.
I happen to co-host a program called the Farm to Table Hour, and our local general manager of the Santa Barbara County Farmers Markets is the co-host with me, and he brings on his picks of the week. He chooses three items that you can find at the farmers markets, and then he creates what's called a fix of the week, and it's a recipe that he creates in his kitchen. And he's got kids, young kids, who he has gotten them to try and then sometimes even enjoy things like, oh, I don't know, radishes, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower and broccoli, asparagus, different kinds of fowl maybe that you might find, or different types of seafood, maybe sea urchins, those kinds of things that you can find at the farmer's market. Right. I'm wondering how you raised your kids in regards to feeding them nutritious meals that also satisfied the taste buds, so to speak. Because I will tell you, when we were in Ireland, and I mentioned to you earlier, that's one of the places I would love to live, we went to a restaurant called River Action, and they served carrots, I want to say cauliflower, and turnips. But what made them, I liked all of them, what made them really palatable, more so than if they were just cut up into pieces, They pureed them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fairly thick puree, and they were delicious, including the turnips.
Yes.
You know, because I know a lot of people are not real fond of turnips. My mother was the same way with feeding us. She made her own yogurt, made orange juice flavored yogurt popsicles for the summertime. That was just one of those things that she made, and all kinds of other things, and really did her utmost to feed us the good food. And by the way, what we used to eat back in the 60s and 70s was not organic, but it was not, it would be considered organic today. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, yes.
So tell us about how you raised your kids in regards to the foods and drink that they consumed.
So, when my kids, let's use Brussels sprouts, some kids don't like Brussels sprouts. Let's use that. Now my children can't do without having Brussels sprouts. And now their kids are eating it. Back in the days, people used to just boil these things to death where they would. And first of all, they're very, they're gaseous. So you boil them and you make them even softer and mushier, and you take the flavor out of it, So I tend to try to, would cut it up into different things and make a salad and, sort of hide the Brussels sprouts within that, and the kids would eat the salad. Another thing I did for the Brussels sprouts was I roasted them in the oven and roasted them and put a little bit of honey over them, a little sweetness, caramelized them. And you'll find my kids were asking me, "Mom, I love this." And I said, "Yeah, you do?" I said, "Yeah, what are these, Mom?" "Brussels sprouts." "No, I'm eating Brussels sprouts." "Yeah, you are." Because, they have it takes on a whole new flavor profile, right? And it's crunchy, it's crispy, it's delicious. So, you do all these different things to help people to like these different types of foods better. My kids also, they didn't like beets. I tend to, put them into different things, do different things with them. Now they love them, So yeah, it's what you do with the smallest of ingredients, to make it palatable for people to eat, to enjoy. I had friends who said they don't eat this. And when they came to my house, they were eating it. I was watching them. And I was like, "Did you enjoy it?" I said, "Yeah." "Oh, I never eat that." I said, "Well, you just did." doing great things with ingredients that people don't like, I love doing that.
What about this topic of cravings? There are those who believe that if there's a certain food, and we'll keep it to the basic stuff of the vegetables, fruits, and poultry or protein, I should say, that you would work with. And if you're craving a banana, or you're craving grapes, or you're craving cashews, or boy, I would really like to have a steak tonight, or I'd like to have a boneless breast of chicken. There's a reason that you're it's like your body is calling out for these kinds of things. Talk to us about that element of eating.
Cravings, people have them a lot. sometimes they come out in the middle of the night, right? These cravings. Like, I feel to eat this, or I feel to eat that. Enjoyment in food, it's pleasurable. When you're talking about nuts and all these different things and meat, a meal can be created around everything that you just said there: the meat, the grapes, the chicken. You can make a delicious salad with something like that, all these cravings at night times, you can go into your kitchen, chop up some cold chicken, some roasted chicken you just had in the refrigerator, add some grapes to that, toss it up with a little bit of mayo or a little bit of ozu, anything, and create meal, put a crunch top on the top. I always believe in, when you have leftover things in the refrigerator to try to get a meal together, a craving, like you say, I tend to always want to put a little crunch to the top, whatever it may be, get that little crunch going. You enjoy it better. It tastes different than what you had the day before,
Yeah.
So that's how I would approach that.
I love that. I was also thinking about the ways in which we cook. You've already mentioned one way, for specifically with the Brussels sprouts. Oh, the other one, I think the other one was turnips. There's another one that is not a real a real public fan pleaser. But in terms of cooking, first of all, they say you don't really want to, you don't want to boil in water your vegetables. My mother used to make spinach, and I loved the spinach on the plate with butter and so forth. Because you end up cooking right out of it all of the nutrients, and it's now all in the water. So you might as well just forget the spinach, just drink the water.
Yeah.
But there are also those who say there are other things that you don't want to be doing with your foods, like sticking them in a microwave, because it alters the molecular structure of the food to the point where it doesn't have the nutrients that it had before you nuked it, as they say. What are your thoughts?
You know, microwaves are huge now, right? They're everywhere. They're in every household, and people, the quickest of meals now, they have all these frozen meats and vegetables and meals that are packaged, and all you have to do is put it into the microwave. You know, steaming is important. Steaming is, you know, people forget about steaming vegetables and steaming all these different things. Something like turnips and those kind of things, they are hard vegetables. You know, these things do require a boiling system. You do have to, you know, or vacuum them, put them in that vacuum bag, and then you can cook them. And that way they retain all their nutrients. You know. Yeah, in that way, it's retained and you don't have to worry about all of that. Another thing that people do is throw away the water that these vegetables are being cooked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can strain them, you can keep them for sauces, you can add them back to the vegetable, especially if you're pureeing the vegetable. You know, you can always add that water back to it. To soften it, to creamy it, to bring that dish. So there's tons of ways to do it, but nutrients, keeping nutrients in a dish is very important. Of course, you don't always want a microwave. You know, I don't always believe in that microwave. I do use it. There are times when I do absolutely use it, but I like my oven. I like my stove. I like my ovens. I like my grill. I like just going to that, you know, to that fire.
You know, I love the term cured. It implies there was something wrong with this before, but now it's cured. It's no longer sick. another interesting point of conversation in terms of making sure that your foods on your table, they are, how can I put this? I guess contaminant free of whatever it might be. And you talked about washing your fruits and vegetables before you start chopping them up. It is said that, for example, let's just say around Thanksgiving time, you have to make sure that the interior temperature of that turkey is X. What is it? I don't know if it's 165 or 170. I'm not sure exactly what that is. And I guess it also depends upon the bird, too, but the size.
Yeah, it depends on the size of the bird. Yes, yeah. Definitely.
There's a wonderful joke from the old Bob Newhart series where Howard Borden, he was an airline pilot, lived across the hall in an apartment building from Bob and Emily Hartley. And it was Thanksgiving time. And he knocks on the door. They open the door. He comes walking in with this big a pan and a black and smoldering turkey. And of course, Emily goes, "Howard, what happened?" Well, what was it? How did he put it? 1 hour for every pound. So I cook it for 15 hours. Something along those lines. It's like, okay, Howard, stay out of the kitchen. Are there people that you have come across who should stay out of the kitchen?
Listen, I would love people to be in the kitchen because I'm a chef. Cooking is wonderful, but there are those that need to stay out of the kitchen. If you're cooking a bird for 15 hours, you need to stay in the kitchen.
You'd think after 6 hours, you'd start smelling the charred flesh of the turkey. You really, you know, pick up the clues there. I know that there are new ways. We actually cooked a turkey at Thanksgiving this past season. And believe it or not, and it turned out incredible. Are you ready for this? We used a bundt pan.
Uh-huh.
And you know how people will take and they will lower a turkey into the deep fryer outside, please, in terms of deep frying it. Well, you do the same thing. You put the hind end over the big opening, the hole in the middle of the bundt pan. And that way, all of the is it grease, oil? I can't even tell.
All of the fat.
Yes. Drips mm-hmm. down into the bundt pan, yes. but you yes. still put the bundt pan into something else, and you cook it just like you normally would. And it was great. It was marvelous.
Wow.
And it was something that I forget where we saw this. Must have been on either, because we love watching the CBS Sunday morning program. But also we watch a lot of these videos on social media, Facebook and so forth, give some great ideas sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you, because I know you're on Instagram, but yes. do you create little videos on how to do this, that, and the other thing for folks that they can find over on, whether it's YouTube or someplace else, Facebook?
So sure. So, you know, on my Instagram, I show you how I prepare, you know. You know, I love using my mixers. I love using all these different things. So I do show you how it's done. Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. You do see it. If you go onto my Instagram, you can see, you know, whether it's whether I'm cooking a steak, whether I'm doing a fish, you know, they're different. Now, you know, now all these different people brought out all these wonderful little dishes that you can put your fish in and bake them, and it looks so nice and fancy, and it gets all that lovely grill marks. You know, you can do all these different things in the oven. So now that they're modernizing all these different, you know, pots and pans to show all these different things, you know, cooking has gotten, I would say, a lot easier for some people nowadays.
Well, I have to say, too, that we are actually shifting over. We have a lot of pots and pans that I don't know if they're aluminum with a copper bottom and those kinds of things, you know, the shiny silvery stuff, right? But in the drawer, the bottom drawer of the oven, okay, underneath the oven compartment, we have a stack of graduated-sized cast iron pans. And I just recovered from rust a cast iron pot with lid.
Wow.
And
oh,
I had
wow.
and it took me a while. I had to use vinegar and water, soak it for several hours, then go in and scrape it or rub it. And I actually did use steel wool, and I got it all cleaned up, and then I oiled it up just like you're supposed to do. As a matter of fact, my wife has told me, under no circumstances are you to stick anything cast iron in the dish pan when you're doing dishes with, I don't care if you're using Dawn or not. If you want to clean it, water only, then wipe it down with a paper towel. So I adhere to that because cast iron obviously is going to last a lot longer.
Yeah.
How about you? What is your favorite or best cooking apparatus, so to speak, cast iron or
I love cast iron, of course. You know, who doesn't? I love cast iron, but they are a lot of nice, you know, people send stuff to me sometimes to try out, you know, different little companies would send
nice.
A pot or two for me to try out. And, you know, nowadays there are a lot of new things that they're making that are quite good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be expensive. Like, I'm not sending anybody out there to go get, you know, a very expensive pot, because, you know, the prices have gone up on these things now.
Yeah.
Now that everybody loves cooking, and
mm-hmm.
you know, but yeah, taking care of your utensils is a must. Is mm-hmm. an absolutely must, because these things can last a lifetime. Like you said, cast iron, if somebody has it, like you know, you refurbished your cast iron, that's great. You know, some people don't know how to do that, and they'll throw away a perfectly good,
no.
you know, something that they've had in their family for years.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, you know, I love cooking in cast iron. Slow cooking is something that I love to do, slow cook meats. So you put that in a nice, you know, crock pot and, or mm-hmm. something, you get that into the oven, love it, you know.
Yeah.
The meat falls apart, so delicious.
Oh yeah. I and the other thing too is experimentation. What if there is one combination that when you first heard of this or first thought of it, maybe you're thinking, there is no way I would serve something like that because those things just don't go together. And then you put them together and it's like, Wow, what a flavor. Is there one in particular, one combination that you came across?
There's not one in particular, but there are many different things. Like,
Mm-hmm.
like for instance, let me give you a thing. I bake, when I bake, using things like lavender and
Ooh.
things like basil
Yeah.
together in baking, people are like, no, that you don't, how do you, how would that taste? Like, that would taste absolutely delicious. So I like to blend flavors like that, where I have that basil, that flavor, that rosemary flavor that goes into a cake or that goes into a cream or something that will distinguish that flavor, that will pull out something where it'll make that person who's eating it, what is this? This is delicious. What is it? It's a question of what did you put in here? I love that, So yeah, like I said, flavor profile is very, very important,
I
making it
know.
your own.
Well, I know
Sorry.
that my wife likes to add just a splash. I think I don't know if it's tapatio sauce or it's just a hot sauce. I am not a hot food eater in terms of spices. My grandmother, when she made tamales, she made green and red chili tamales, and I liked them both because they were both, we'll put it on the scale, a mild. As far as my tastes were concerned, she never made anything with habanero chilies.
Oh, that's hot, yeah.
Yeah, that's hot. I don't even know if you can put that one out. It's like you just have to wait. But she will put a splash of that. Maybe sometimes she's making scrambled eggs, a couple of drops, and mixes it in. Whatever it is that she's doing, because she likes to do that. Or we'll buy these soups that they sell in the stores. They're in the plastic containers, like loaded potato soup or cream of broccoli and so forth. And she'll put a splash of that in there. Is there a favorite herb or spice? I mean, you mentioned lavender, and I know that that's, I don't want to say that it's faddish, but it certainly is something that a lot of people are now using, not only for the flavor, but isn't lavender, doesn't it have some nutritional attributes?
It has a calming effect on you as
Ooh.
well. It's very medicinal, things like that. And I like using stuff like that. You can put it in tea. You can do almost anything. Like, for instance, my lamb in the book, I have a recipe for lamb, and I used lavender and rosemary together, on the lamb. That is like so flavorful, and yes, it does have those sort of medicinal things, which I love. Cooking things like all these different things, mint, basil, rosemary, they all have all these great fragrance, but they also add something to it in the nutrition factor,
What about the palate? Now, many people who are listening probably have been, for the better part of their lives, eating a lot of fast food, a lot of dine out kind of stuff, at the re different restaurants. And we're not talking five star per se. We're just saying they just go out to eat. We have a wonderful one here in Santa Barbara. It's actually in Goleta, California, called The Nugget. And they've got a from my perspective, a great beef stroganoff. It's really good. But if they were put to the test, I loved this one wine testing that they did, tasting testing, where the person testing the wine, tasting it, I should say, did not know what the wine was. Not so much the varietal as much as, okay, this glass came from a $60 bottle. And this is two buck chuck. And what was fascinating was that the majority of the people chose the two buck chuck, just as a point of terminology. Do you feel that is there a way for us to, and as maybe it's not necessary, I don't know, to refine, if that's the right word, our palates so that we can better. I can't. There's a phrase that's coming to mind. Gastronomically, be aware of what it is that we're really eating. Really taste it. Really experience the food that we're eating? Is that even a thing that we even want to pursue?
You know, some people go through the, I love pairing my food with different wines. You know, like when I'm having dinner, for instance, with my friends or family, when I'm entertaining, or even when I have my clientele, I tell them, you know, if I cater a certain food for them, I tell them which wine I think they should use for their guests. I think that is important because whether you're cooking, you know, you don't want to eat duck with something that's going to overtake that flavor, that's going to overtake your palate, that's going to make that a bitter tone or something like that. So, you know, I do believe in pairing my foods with the right wines. It doesn't always have to be that expensive wine, right? It doesn't always have to be. But, you know, a knowledge of, you know, I'm not a wine connoisseur, but I do love pairing my foods with wine. So I take a special interest in, you know, learning about wines that would go with the different meats, that would go with the different vegetables, that would go, you know, something that will go all wrong, like a nice Pinot Grigio or Pinot Noir. That's one of my go-to things. Is a Pinot Noir is a wine that you can practically have with a lot of different things.
Yeah. And what about this aspect of the palate itself? Let's say that set the wines aside in terms of truly, and again, I'm not sure if this is the correct word or terminology to use, but truly savoring and really experiencing and enjoying the Brussels sprouts or the broccoli or the fish or whatever it is that's on the plate.
You mean together with what you're serving it with to drink?
Not necessarily. No, just literally being able to taste, maybe even taste those individual herbs and or spices, like, oh, I really pick up on that lavender, or I'm picking up on that mint, or I'm picking up on this kind of thing, that kind of thing. Is there a way for us to develop a more educated palate, if that's the right term?
You know, you actually could. People need to take the time. Take the time and savor your food. Put a bite in your mouth, close your eyes. It's like drinking fine wine and champagne, you know. Close your eyes a little. You know, think back to, what are you tasting? What is that back taste that you're tasting? Are you tasting that lemon zest? Are you tasting that, like you said, lavender? Are you tasting that rosemary? You know, things that don't have a pungent flavor, like garlic. Everybody knows when they eat garlic because garlic is so pungent.
Right.
But the flavors that you're talking about that you want to enjoy, like the lavender and the rosemary and all these different flavors, you do taste it. I taste it. So once you enjoy, the enjoyment of a meal is very important, you know. Enjoy. Close your eyes. Take that one bite. Enjoy it. See what you're tasting. Are you tasting that beautiful pink salt? Are you picking up on that lovely red peppercorns? Are you enjoying that lovely rosemary and that together with that lemon zest?
Right.
You can definitely taste flavors. Definitely. We all can. We just need to take that time. You know, if we eat hurriedly, we won't taste it. But take our time and just know what's going on in the back of our palates. You'll get the hang of it.
By the way, speaking of hurriedly, I heard something just the other day that it takes the brain approximately 20 minutes to tell you that you're full. So if
20
you
minutes, huh?
20 minutes, or approximately, everybody's different, but approximately 20 minutes. So if you eat fast, you're going to get full real fast and maybe end up stuffing yourself. As a kid, I used to go back for seconds at Thanksgiving. I stopped doing that 30 years ago because it was so uncomfortable. I did not like that bloated, stretched feeling. And then the coma that followed. I just have one final question before we wrap things up here. And let me let you folks know that we're talking with Chef Sagajo, Debbie Wilson Bermont, and we're talking about the Sagajo experience. ChefSagajo.com is the website we'll be linked to. She's also on Instagram at Chef Sagajo. It's just Chef Sagajo. You go to Instagram, put in Chef Sagajo. Just the last question I want to ask you in regards to all of the things that we've talked about thus far. What pairs well, wine-wise, with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? And I'm going to take a shot and say grape juice.
Grape juice. I think just plain old grape juice is fine.
Chef Sagajo, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program and for sharing with us. And of course, you have this book, The Sagajo Experience, which fantastic. And it seems to me like another good rule to follow is keep it simple. If you put too many ingredients in, you're not going to know what you're tasting anymore. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a unique blend, but, and I kind of learned that more from Gordon Ramsay and his programs, where he was always telling his people when they were creating their own recipes, keep it simple, right?
Yeah. Keep it simple and enjoy it. And the most important thing is for you to enjoy being in the kitchen and enjoy your guests when you have them and enjoy the pleasure of food and company. Yeah. You know, that's a Sagajo experience, you know.
Well, I do have three final questions that I ask all of my guests, which I will ask you in just a moment. But first, I want to thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms thank for you. A new world where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We are here on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for a special edition of Tell Me Your Story. And then Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m., 9 different programs, 9 different guests, 9 different conversations. There's something about the number 9. Number 9. Oh, wait a minute. I am sorry. That's already been done. We hope also that you will listen at those times I've mentioned at richarddugan.com, because that's when we stream those programs live at richarddugan.com. We stream and we are also podcasting on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many other locations. We're on YouTube where you can watch these conversations. We hope you will subscribe and click notifications so when a new conversation is posted, like this one, you'll be notified and you can tune into that conversation. We also ask that if you can support the work we're doing financially, we would be gratefully appreciative. We have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. Any amount is gratefully appreciated. We'll take energetic support as well. We'll put it to good use, I promise you, either way. And put in my email address when they ask, to whom are you sending? Richard@richarddugan.com. That's Richard@richarddugan.com. Really, really easy. And we also ask that you spend some time during this decade of perfect vision, the 2020s, going within to that quiet, peaceful, calm, still place, listening to that still small voice. Or in my case, I am listening for the promptings of my father. I'm listening to the voice of my sister, as well as my best friend and my dear friend, who you'll hear about at the end of the program. So I hope you'll take the time to do that. With all that being said, we go to our final three questions for a very special guest. And I'll put it this way. The first question is, who is Debbie Wilson Bermont?
Uh-huh. Debbie Wilson Bermont. Debbie Wilson Bermont is a mother, is a wife, is a chef who loves doing what she does.
What is it that gets you up in the morning?
What gets me up in the morning is that my kids, my family, my husband, my job. I love doing what I do. I'm excited to get up every morning. I thank God for the day. I love opening my eyes and knowing that it's a new blessed day. That's what gets me up in the morning.
And finally, what was your best day?
I've had lots of best days, you know. This is one of my best days, being here with you doing this podcast.
Why, thank you so much.
Yes, yes. Thank you so very much for having me on.
Oh, really, you are very welcome. And again, thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. And until our next broadcast, podcast, video cast, love to all. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy because I am. Smokey, I will see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.